This is an iHeart podcast.
You don't have to dip forever. You know that, right? You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. Oh, that's bad for me. I'm going to quit. I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'm just going to quit cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum, sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free. It's nicotine-free. It's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches because it really helps take that extra edge off. Get a jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is our final show of the year. Our final Jesse Kelly Show of the year. A Merry Christmas to you. Up yours, Chris. It is going to be an Ask Dr. Jesse show, even though it's only Wednesday. I promised you sent incredible questions in, and we're going to get to them. We're going to get to questions about rebelling. Rebelling here in America. What does it look like to be part of the resistance? Which we're all about to be part of. What do I feel about people using the term doctor? And we have a new animal fights edition of Ask Dr. Jesse. I'm not going to give the animals away yet. Two juggernauts going toe to toe. And I have what, Chris? I have strong feelings about this. It's going to be an awesome day. But first, allow me to just put this out there right away. As I've told you a thousand times, I will never do a show you have to turn off with your kids in the car. I don't do perverse stuff. It's not because I'm a good person. I'm an absolutely wretched person, an immoral monster. I am. But I am also a dad. And I'm so sick of having to turn off even TV commercials when my sons are around because everything's crap now. So I'm never going to do that to you. But if there was ever a show that might be too heavy in the beginning for your child, this is probably it. I am not going to give it away, all of it, right now, because that wouldn't be fair to anybody. I will simply say we are dealing with real human history. A lot of it is unknown to most people, and it is absolutely ugly brutality of one human being, several human beings, to several other human beings. And I'm going to tell you what happened today. I am. Because it is important that we know some things. So there you have it. Enter at your own risk. Obviously, it's not going to be perverse, but it's going to be a heavy, heavy opening before we get to animal fights, Chris. Gosh, why can't we make animal fights happen? These animal rights activists, they ruin everything. What? Whatever. All right. I knew a guy one time. He was a doctor. He was a great, great dude. And we were good buddies. We were both highly educated. You know, he had his doctorate, and I have almost 3 years of community college credits. And we were having a couple beers one night, just sitting around. There's nothing. I wasn't in for a visit. He was just a friend. He was sitting around. And we had this conversation. I will never forget it as long as I live. And I forget how the subject came up of animal experimentation. Human experimentation as test subjects, I mean, for medicines, for everything, shampoo, whatever you want. What's right? What's wrong? What's humane? What do you think you should do? What do you think you shouldn't do? And he told me something. I think about it all the time now. And now that I tell you, you're going to think about it all the time. And you're definitely going to think about it the next time you go into your doctor's office or go in for surgery. And he said, Jesse, let me be really, really frank with you on something. Doctors feel their work is the most important thing in the world. And oftentimes, I'm not downplaying that, it is. But he said, doctors feel their work is the most important thing in the world. And he said, Jesse, if you could read minds, you would be shocked how many doctors out there think human experimentation is 100% justified for what they do. My jaw dropped. I just didn't think about doctors in that way. He said, I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm not. I wouldn't do it. But he said, and then again, I wouldn't admit to you if I was going to do it anyway. Remember that shame society we talk about all the time now? Understandable. Shame can be healthy. Just because I lack it doesn't mean it's unhealthy. Let's dig in, folks. Hang on for this one. We're going to go back, rewind just a little bit. I'm not going to give you a Japan backstory as I've done so many times on the Meiji Restoration and Japan coming back, becoming a modern nation. We're going to jump right to the first Sino-Japanese War. And remember this about prejudice. As we've said 10 trillion times, every single person has some prejudice. Control yours as best you can. But in this day and age where we're chasing down racism ghosts everywhere, remember, every adult walking the planet has prejudice of some kind. Doesn't have to be skin color. It could be against religion or nationality or tall people, short people, skinny people, fat people, blondes, brunettes, Asians, whatever the case may be. People have built-in prejudices because of their upbringing and because of their life experiences. Culture helps shape this. And remember something, and remember this well, when you're taught all the white guilt history about America, everyone's racist, and some of the people considered to be minority nations, which is absurd, they're not a minority in their nation, they're some of the most racist people on the planet. You know I'm a lover of Japan. I think their culture's awesome. I've been there more than once. I think it's really, really just a cool place. I love Japan. I can't speak to now because I didn't experience any of this there. Historically, Japan is one of the most exclusive racist places around. It just is. They thought they were the greatest people on the planet. And I look, as long as you can control that thought, that's not a terrible way. It's better than hating yourself. You don't want to think I'm superior to everyone else, as they did, but it's a lot better than thinking I suck. I hope someone destroys me. But they thought they were superior to everyone else. Japan looked at everywhere in the world, the West, China, everywhere, and said to themselves, these people are barbarians. Our culture is far superior to theirs. And because they were advancing militarily, it really helped give them permission to take the things they wanted to take. They fought something called the First Sino-Japanese War, giving them control of Korea. We're not talking about that today, but just know this. The Japanese occupation of Korea was horrific, brutal. Tried to completely blot out their culture, ban their language. I mean, a lot of what Japan did in Korea, that's the reason Korea is such a disaster today. North, South, division, communism, it's because of all that. It all comes from that. So we know that. And Japan is having real, real problems with China. Historically, they always seem to be in some tiff. Japan thinks Chinese people, they're less than others. They're certainly less than Japan. And look, in their defense, China thinks the same thing about Japan. It's not as if that prejudice goes one way. Now, I'll set that aside, knowing that mentality. In 1925, we banned. When I say we, I say the world got together and started banning certain things. This is a post-World War I era where we watched chlorine gas choke young men to death with their eyes bleeding out of their skulls. It's one thing to see someone shot. Not a pleasant experience. It's another entirely to watch your buddy choke to death. The way you die means a lot. The world was horrified by what happened in World War I. The world decided they were going to do something about it, and that changed some things in ways you're not going to expect for certain countries. All right, get ready for some darkness and animal fights. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly.
Natural medicines and holistic healing approaches are known to help alleviate issues. Issues that we all have. And nobody likes to talk about their issues, right? I'm not saying you have to advertise it, but look, you have any anxiety? Headaches? Joint pain? I woke up this morning, the whole left side of my body hurt. I had to move some boxes around yesterday. I choose CBD. I choose CBD. And if you're going to make that choice, if you're going to give it a try, why not go with a company that has experience? Doctors Trusted CBD Company, their founders, they've been doing this since 1999. And they took the time to research the entire industry so you and I won't have to do trial and error on which CBD works and which CBD doesn't work. Go to doctorstrustedcbd.com, use the promo code Jesse. That gets you 5% off and a free lip balm.
You're having fun with your family. In the meantime, you're having all kind of other bullshit.
A little too drunk?
No, I'm not drunk, as a matter of fact.
Can you put your mask on?
You can go yourself. How's that?
Well, I don't need a mask on.
You know why I don't need a mask? Because there ain't nothing
wrong with me. I like your Trump phone.
You're right.
Guess who Trump likes? He likes my dad.
Yeah, he no, he doesn't like your phone.
He does.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, I love the audio. I can't help myself. Look, we're going to have to brighten up the story a little bit on occasion here. We are talking about something dark today. Before we get to an Ask Dr. Jesse Wednesday, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at JesseKellyDC until I get banned. Follow the show at JesseKellyShow. Download the podcast. Chris podcasts every single one right after the show on iHeart, Google, Spotify, and on iTunes. You see, they started banning things like chemical weapons, biological weapons. The world was realizing just how devastating these weapons could be. And, I mean, they started after World War I. You have to understand what a brutal shock to the entire world's system that war was. Very rarely can you say things like, this has never happened before in history. I mean, that's the entire reason we do a history segment every single day on this show. We're showing perspective. We're showing there's nothing new under the sun. We're learning lessons from the past. We're going through this and that. Plus, it's all really cool, right? Well, World War I casualty numbers, 1 million here, 1 million there, 50,000 in one day. These numbers had never been seen before in the history of the world, and not even close. Entire nations losing a huge percentage of their young male population were in a state of shock. National PTSD. When you get to something like that, a place like that, you start trying to make sure this never happens again. This can't ever happen again. The weapons have changed. We can't ever. It was too much. It's too much. So they start banning these things. Well, if you're Japan, 1925. Remember, you now are in advanced nation status. You're starting to really kick other people around a little bit. You need some more resources, and you're feeling pretty stinking disrespected by the European nations, by America. You feel like they're prejudiced towards you, and we were, by the way. Europe was, we were. Again, prejudice for everybody. They thought the West was soft. We thought they were tiny, dumb, yellow men. We use words like monkeys to describe them. Look, it went both ways. Again, everyone has it. Japan thought to themselves, well, if they're banning these things, they must work really, really well. Which is a logical way to think about it. And we have talked about this endlessly. You need to understand this for today. And this is not a defense of Japan at all. There is no defense, no explanation for what happened today. But I want you to hear me here. There is a huge basic philosophical difference between how the Western nations look at things like war and how the East looks at things like war. Western nations, so much of our philosophy, so much of our base is based on a Christian moral code. It is. Doesn't mean you're a Christian, but that is what so much of the Western law and warfare and rules, it's based on some sort of Christian moral code where you have a certain distance you should go. Of course, we cross it a million times. You have a certain distance you should go, and then it goes from being right to being wrong. It goes from being good to being evil. In the East, they don't operate with that kind of philosophy. In general, these are generalities here. There's a reason the Mongol conquests were so horrific. There's a reason the things Japan did, like in today's story, were so horrific. They don't value the individual human life in the same way. I don't want to say that you and I do, because maybe you don't at all. In general, an Eastern nation is going to look at human life as simply a practical thing that exists instead of a valuable individual God-created soul. Period. It's just a fact. You can argue their way is evil. Fine. I'm not going to tell you it's not. You're going to hear things today that you're going to say, oh, that's evil. That's not right or wrong. That's evil. That's demonic. You are about to hear some things like this. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. However, it's not how they view the world. Japan begins. There's a man named Shiro Ishii. He's a general. Japan begins to extensively study biological weapons, chemical weapons. They are trying to figure out how they can get a leg up on the competition. Not only to kill the enemy, that was a huge part of it, not only to kill the enemy, but to protect their own guys. They wanted to know, how do we advance here? How do we advance there? Our guys are suffering from this. We need to know. So many of the things we're going to talk about here, they have in the mind of somebody who doesn't think someone has a soul, they have a real practical application. Japan was facing a problem. Japan wanted to figure out how to find a solution. General Ishii bounces around the globe a little bit, talking to this person, studying this, studying that, and realizes he really needs his own special unit. He needs his own special area where he can conduct some experiments on other human beings. Well, it just so happens Japan is now in control of Manchuria, a big part, northeast corner of China. Japan has essentially taken this place over. And Japan, the Japanese at this time, looked at the Chinese like they were dogs. They considered the Chinese to be subhuman forms of life. They did. And look, like I said, it went both ways. They start a little fortress there, a little prison there. It's so secretive that you are not allowed within a certain radius of it. If you come within a certain radius of it, you'll be shot. A young boy was shot. They found him shot to death outside of it one day. He was just curious, went and looked. The place was so creepy that it had a barbed wire top to the wall that you couldn't see over and a drawbridge to make sure nobody could come in. If a train went by, a train had to have the curtains closed that were facing that prison. That's how secretive it was. But eventually word gets out anyway and they have to close it down. Word starts to get out that people are disappearing there. That ugly things are happening there and people can't quite figure out what are they doing? It's just a prison, right? But no one seems to be coming out alive. At the same time, things get lost in China. It's far away from the world. It's people are confused. Then World War II really kicks off, or at least I should say the Japanese-Chinese portion of World War II really, really kicks off. Many would argue it's already kicked off there. And Shiro Ishii, he gets a whole new unit. This unit is called 731. That's a shortened version of his unit. And this unit is, it has the fluffiest, you know, official name in the world. I'm not even going to read it all for you. It's a water purification and ecological study unit and disease prevention unit is officially how it's classified. But here's what you need to know about it. What you need to know about it is they set up shop in China and they have every intention of taking advantage of the humans at their disposal. And they're about to take advantage.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
What does resisting the left look like in the future? We're going to talk about that. It's one of your Ask Dr. Jesse questions on this Ask Dr. Jesse Wednesday. But let us begin in China. Japan decides they're going to set up a facility, and this facility is going to attempt to solve some of the problems Japanese troops are facing, and you're not going to believe some of these problems they tried to solve. And it's going to try to figure out how to create a weapon of mass destruction, how to slaughter everyone. And, well, let's just get right to it. First of all, there were plenty of prisoners of war. There were Russian prisoners of war who were killed in this unit. There were American prisoners of war killed in this unit. The Chinese people were the ones who had to endure the bulk of these tests. But if you want to know something absolutely horrific to tell you what happened here, just know this. People were walking around with their hands attached to the wrong arm. Why did that happen, you may ask? Oh, well, here are just some of the things they pulled off in Unit 731. And the end of this is probably going to be the most shocking part, so just hang on here. Hopefully you don't lose your lunch. The Japanese were fighting in cold environments too. They really, really obviously encountered this one during the Russo-Japanese War. The Japanese needed to know better ways to treat frostbite. All right, well, soldiers get cold, need to figure out how to treat frostbite. They would take prisoners, and not just prisoners of war, I guess I should clarify that. They would pick up orphans off the street. They would snatch up women from a village. They would just send in the Japanese military police and just walk into a home and grab people and throw them in. You don't have to be a soldier. You don't have to be a POW for them to get you. They'll ask for volunteers and bribe people into coming to the town square and then kidnap all of them. They kidnapped women, children, old people, babies, men. I'm probably going to skip over the baby stuff today. It's too much. It's too much. It's too much for me. If they wanted to figure out something when it comes to frostbite for their troops, they would take you out, probably more than one of you, tie you in the freezing cold to a stake in the ground, completely cover your body with warm, you know, so you could keep warm, and leave something like, sometimes it was your legs and feet, sometimes it was your arm exposed. And they wanted to let it get freezing, so they would pour water all over it. And then they would come out after it was getting colder and colder and obviously turning blue and black, and they would see there was ice on it, and they would chip the ice. Remember, you're alive, you're not asleep, you're not under any pain medication. They would chip the ice off your freezing arm and then pour more water on it and more water on it and more water on it. They would wait until your arm was sufficiently frostbitten enough to begin their experimental treatments on your arm. We're talking 100,000 people or more went through this, by the way. This is not 50 people. This is a huge human rights disaster historically, and people don't know about it. They would take a stick and hit your arm with it once it was frozen to test if it was cold enough. And we have the written documents now, the ones that weren't destroyed. They would hit your arm until it made a sound like hitting a piece of wood, and then they knew your arm was sufficiently cold enough. Once they got done with that, they tried to figure out the best way to avoid the frostbite, to treat the frostbite. They would do things like burn you, boiling water on you. They were worried about the Japanese troops having their limbs removed, having their limbs blown off, as happens in war. I'm trying to be as gentle as I can be here. Sometimes, you well know it, people lose arms, legs, they lose feet, they lose hands. They would chop off both of your hands, oftentimes without anesthesia, and sew one onto the other side of the body. Why were they doing this? They were doing this because they wanted to know if you could get the other hand, the right hand, to take on the left arm. So maybe if their soldier needed a prosthetic, maybe you could get something going if you could simply just attach the hand over there. Then we can snatch up other prisoners. They would take a hand that wasn't yours. Go chop off your right hand, chop off your cellmate's right hand, and attach his right hand to yours. See if it'll work on the human body. Oh, it gets worse. It gets worse. They did pressure tests. You may be aware the Nazis did this in Auschwitz to the Jews as well, but they were very interested in air pressure and the things air pressure did to the human body. They would lock you in chambers and turn up the air pressure until your eyeballs popped out of your head. They would bury people alive. They were very interested in biological weapons, and this stuff is just beyond belief. their biological weapon tests really, really ran the gamut. Sometimes they would haul in a prisoner and inject him with something and tell him it's a vaccine. Sometimes they wouldn't tell him anything. Sometimes they would take prisoners out to a field and they would tie them in a circle. They'd all get tied to a stake in the ground that was a circle. Only there would be multiple circles. You see, this circle would have a center to it like every circle does, only the people around it would be 10 feet, we'll call it. I'm making up that number, 10 feet. But you'd need another circle where the people will be 20 feet around it. And then they would set off bombs in the middle of these circles, biological weapon bombs, chemical weapon bombs, to see just how close to the bomb you had to be in order to ensure you would get infected with this deadly disease or this deadly piece of this deadly chemical. They were very interested in the plague. They would take rats. You know, the fleas are on the rats. They would make sure the fleas had the plague. And then they would load up bombs, load up these low-flying planes. Sometimes they were porcelain bombs full of plague-infested fleas. And they would fly them over Chinese cities. Not once, not twice. At least 11 different Chinese cities had bombs of plague dropped on them. Tens of thousands of casualties, more than we'll ever know. They wanted to experiment with poison. So they would bounce around China and poison reservoirs, poison entire water supplies. This is a tough one here. They had a serious problem in the Japanese army with assaulting a woman. So I don't even want to use the R word, with assaulting a woman. And the problem the Japanese army had with it wasn't that the assaults were happening. It was that the men who were committing these assaults were coming back with diseases that you pick up from assaults like that. You know, STDs. I'm not going to say that word again. It's kind of gross. They were coming back with STDs. In order to solve this problem, there wasn't an issue passed down to treat women the correct way. They simply decided they were going to start finding new ways to treat said STDs. Hang on for the ride. We're almost done, and then we're going to get to animal fights and pretend doctors. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You see, I'm not going to defend Japan here. By the way, we have my thoughts on pretend doctors and people who call themselves doctors. We have that in a few minutes. I don't think we're doing a guest today. It's our year-end show. We have all this great year-end audio to play. We're going to play our best audio of the year. We have animal fights. I don't think we have room for a guest today, Chris. All right, back to these tests they were doing. Remember the difference we talked about in the beginning of the show between a Western philosophy when it comes to war and an Eastern philosophy. We've talked about this before when it comes to Japan and World War II. The things they did when they took a city, when they took a place, the things they did to prisoners, the things they did to women and children. Horrific. Indefensible. Yes. I mean, horrific. Indefensible. They did things I won't talk about on the show. I have details that I will not give you on the show. You're welcome to look them up yourself. But they were following the rules of warfare that had always existed since the beginning of mankind. Remember that. This new way we do war, that is the new way. In their mind, when you conquer a place, when you conquer a people, the people who exist there are yours, and you can do with them as you please. That is a rough way to look at life. But it's important for you and I to understand that is also the way it goes. That is how life works. That is how life has worked. That's how it worked for them. The Japanese troops were infamous, absolutely infamous, for having their way with whatever women they came across. They were constantly coming back with diseases. How do you try to solve this problem if you're Japan and you don't have a real solid footing as far as human life goes? You begin to grab women and men off the street, totally innocent Chinese people. You bring them to your lab. You start injecting them with these diseases. Then they decided these may not be the most appropriate test cases because they've been injected. So they would take one prisoner, a man who's been infected, and get him with another prisoner, a woman who hasn't been infected, and they would stand around in their full gear, masks and everything, and force them on each other repeatedly. They did this to old women. They did this to pregnant women. They did a lot of surgery in there. And we are going to wrap this thing up here because this is about as much of this as I need to put on you for the day or I need to take in for myself. This was some of the heaviest stuff I've ever had to read about. I'll tell you that much. Finally, a matter of routine there was surgery on the prisoners. They wanted to know the inner workings of the body. They would routinely strap people down, perform various surgeries on them without the benefit of anesthesia while the prisoner was awake. Every kind of surgery you can imagine, from amputation, heart surgery, cutting out part of your liver, cutting out your stomach while the prisoner was awake. And you should absolutely know this as an American. Americans died like this. People who fought for you, young men, overseas to fight for your freedom, to fight for this country, they met their end in this way. Do you want to know what happened to General Ishii when all this was over? Yes, there were people executed for war crimes. You want to know what happened to the man responsible for all this? Every bit as evil as Dr. Mengele, that famous doctor from, I believe it was Auschwitz, who performed all those experiments on the Jews. Ishii was just as evil as that man. Do you want to know what happened to General Ishii? Well, when the war was over, Japan tried to burn as much of the documentation of this as humanly possible. They knew this wouldn't be seen favorably on the world stage. We, however, we really wanted this information from Japan. We wanted to know, what did you learn? I mean, you did the human experimentation. We certainly didn't do it, but I would like your research and figure out what works and what doesn't work. We took the Japanese in. We couldn't get them to talk. We threatened them with turning them over to the Soviets. Isn't it hilarious how this works? The Soviets wanted them too. The Soviets were not going to ask them for the information in the same way we were going to ask them for the information. Japan was painfully aware of this and not wanting to live out the rest of their days having their fingernails pulled out in a gulag while being interrogated. They agreed to work with the United States of America if they could have immunity for their crimes. The person responsible for most of this got complete immunity for everything he did and lived to be an old man. You remember that conversation we had about doctors in the very beginning of the show? We're about to lay this out for you. And then we're going to talk about animal fights. Hang on.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy, your football buddy, or you, your best man, your worst man, you, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say one in three adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's seven members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the one in three could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its pre-diabetes awareness partners.
Oh, yes. We have my thoughts on Pretend Doctors year-end audio. It is our final show of the year, Christmas show, but here's something. Remember that conversation we had in the beginning of the show about my doctor friend who said, you can't imagine how many doctors are actually secretly for human experimentation because they believe what they do is more important and that is the greater good? We don't know the numbers killed by Unit 731. We'll never know because they destroyed so much documentation of it. They say 200,000, they say 300,000, they say 400,000. It was shocking. The numbers are shocking. The things they did are shocking. But here's the thing. You can picture these monsters doing these things to women, children, babies, old, young. Do you know who worked in Unit 731? Doctors. Nurses. Not people you would consider to be sadists. People here to help for the greater good. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly Show.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good-looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? Usually my drink was give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink. The guys come in. I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down. but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
This is an iHeart podcast.